Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Will Broadfoot. How are you, Will?
I'm very well, sir. Very well indeed.
Excellent, excellent. The man who's invested in more moustache wax than I know.
Yeah, it was a Movember bet about 2 years ago that went horribly wrong, and my mate said, if you keep growing it, we'll keep paying you. So I hasten to add, no one's still paying me, but my kids think it's funny, so I've kept it.
Okay, excellent, excellent. You're the show marketing manager for the London Wine Fair, is that right?
Yes, that's correct, yeah. I've been doing it for 20 years now, so this is my 20th Wine Fair. I've seen a few changes, two venues, and a lot of people come and go. But the premise still remains pretty much the same. You know, we are a trade event, putting buyer and seller together in the same room.
In fact, I interviewed you, it must have been 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when you got, the show was still at Excel. And since then, we've moved back to Olympia. Do you want to just give us an overview? I'm quite interested about how the show's going this year, but just a quick overview of maybe the last 5, 6 years of the show, because it was in Excel and you tried to position yourself as an international wine fair, and then now you've brought it more back into a UK-centric show.
That's right, yeah. I'll tell you, the key point probably in the last decade has been 2008. Over in Excel, that was by far and away the biggest wine fair we've ever run. We had something like 1,000 exhibitors, and you know, the floor was awash with double-decker stands, and you know, I think 15,000, 16,000 visitors over 3 days was our record. Then Lehman Brothers happened, and that really kind of signalled the end of an era, I guess, for the show in its old form. You only have to go and see how many of the companies that were then massive independents now simply don't exist at all, or they've consolidated, been taken over, and been swallowed up. It's a very different sort of trading platform out there now compared to back then. And, you know, we recognised that, and we realised that we had to adapt the show model to take into account the changes that were going on. None of this being helped, of course, by the government's duty escalator and perhaps the dominance of the UK supermarkets in squeezing, you know, any bit of profit out from the importer and the producer. So what we tried to do, or what we decided to do, was come up with an event which catered much, much more closely for the UK market. We still do get a large percentage of overseas visitors, something like 18% coming in from overseas, but it tends to be from those nations who, like us, are importing. So the Scandinavians, Belgium, companies where import is very much the norm, as opposed to producer-led nations, France, Germany, etc. So we still get these guys along, and they find the UK market fascinating simply because it still is, I think, by volume, perhaps even by value, the largest import market for consumption in the world. And that makes it exciting. A lot of trends are still sort of set and developed in the UK that you then see spread throughout the wine drinking world. And a lot of those, you know, often seem to start in London. But in terms of the show and how we wanted to manage that, we just felt that bringing it back to kind of meet our very, very core audience would be the way we could sustain and build it for the future.
I remember this show, I think it was the one when the Icelandic volcano ripped its top and no one could fly in. I think that was the last time you did it at Excel, was it, or the time before? But that was quite a quiet show. It was a big space and a lot of people couldn't travel to it from overseas because you were getting a lot of overseas travellers. Now you seem to be focusing more on bringing people down from Manchester or Liverpool coming down into the show. Is that a fair enough comment?
Yeah, it is, yeah. I mean, natural disasters I can't do much about, but if you've got a sommelier who's running a restaurant or a wine list in a restaurant in the north of England, or perhaps an independent retailer who's got a couple of stores down in the southwest, we will actually pay for them to travel to the show. We'll put on lunches where they can meet their peers and the other people in the same position, and this is a really good way for us to kind of ensure that the right type of visitor, buyer, is coming through the doors. We still, of course, work hard to make sure the supermarket buyers and the big wholesalers are here and doing business. But ever more important is getting the little guys through the door as well. So we work hard, not just inviting the buyers to come along, but also to come up with feature areas on the show floor that we know will really appeal to them. A good example of that might be Esoterica, which is a little sort of specific dedicated zone we created, I think, 3 years ago, coinciding with the move back to Olympia. You're going to find 80, 90 boutique UK importers, and they're only offering wines, they're only importing wines that you're not going to find elsewhere. You're not going to find them in the high street necessarily, in the supermarkets. So those sort of like discovery wines have become more and more important for sommeliers, independent retailers, and buyers in general. So we've really enhanced that kind of area, that sort of proposition within the show.
It's still quite a few big double-decker booths and all that sort of stuff, and some of the bigger names there. Not, is it not?
No, well, we've got part of our sort of restructuring. We still got the big names.
Yeah. Not all of them. Maybe I'm getting confused because there are still some big spaces.
Yeah, we've still got some big stands. You know, people like Fells, PLB, Bibendum, you know, they're still here in force. But what you won't find is the sort of double-decker monster pavilions that we used to have. And the reason is we've stopped it. We said, right, that's it. We even considered capping stand size, but that actually got met with a bit of a negative wave. So we couldn't go that far. But we just need to manage people's expectations a bit better. You know, again, back in the heyday of XL, when you had these, I think one year we had 20 double-deckers, the cost to construct those is huge. You know, they have to be properly surveyed by structural surveyors and signed off, just the same as a building of two stories. And the cost runs into tens of thousands. And what we found was, you know, you'd get companies investing a huge amount of money in building a stand, and then a new FD had come along 2 years later or whatever and say, you're spending how much on 3 days? And you're quantifying that. Where's the return ratio? How are you justifying that? And, of course, it becomes harder and harder to justify these vast sums being invested in a tough trading conditions that the UK has seen. And so we said, look, don't spend vast, vast sums. Just think about your proposition. Think about how best to exhibit your wines to a really specific market, the UK trade, and that seems to be working.
I do know one double-decker in there. Nightimber. Yeah. Nightimber have a double-decker bus.
You've got me there, mate. Yep. We do have a double-decker bus. Nightimber, what a fabulous success story they're having.
I've seen a few. There's Furley as well, not near Nightimber. So there's a few English producers here as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've, you know, I don't think they'll mind me saying this, but they've just got their act together. It's taken a few years, but I think the critical mass, the number of wineries creating, I mean, not just good wine, but world-class wine, has increased exponentially in the last 5, 6, 7 years. And, you know, under the auspices of the English Wine Consortium, the Wine Producers Guild, you know, they have done superbly well, and they're now, I think, a very, very credible force on the world stage. It's great to see.
Are you seeing more? How many English producers have you got here? Is it? I only saw two, so.
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but I'm guessing there's probably around 15, 20 dotted around. So some will be on kind of shared generic stands, but yeah, it's 20 more than we had 10 years ago.
Exactly. We're only halfway through the show. I'm actually recording this on just after lunch on day two. Yep. So far, how are the numbers looking? You know, you're up, down, all around?
I think they're steady. Yesterday, I can only judge that really on what feedback I was getting from exhibitors, and they seemed, on the whole, really pleased. It would be very easy for me to flood the show with the wrong people. You know, people won't realize that every year we actually reject or eject, even in some cases, hundreds of people who just don't fit the bill as wine trade, especially wine trade buyers. These are the guys we want through the door. So for me, it's never really been about pure numbers. And if we're up or down, you know, ultimately, it's who they were, what businesses they control. This is the important thing. And come Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening, when I get the sort of final figures, I'll get a clear picture of how successful, from my point of view at least, the show's been. But ultimately, if the exhibitors turn around and say, guys, that was a blockbuster, I'll take that every time.
Okay. You mentioned Esoterica as a innovation that you introduced a couple of years ago. And that seems like quite a consistent with your move to be more UK focused in terms of finding suppliers for the retailers or the independents. Other things that you've invented or done recently?
Another good example is Wines Unearthed. That's again in its second year. It's another tasting driven pod zone, if you like, and the pods are occupied by producers who have no importer. So they are looking purely for importers, be they traditional UK importers or some restaurants, even supermarkets, will import direct. And that's a real source of opportunity for the visitor, because if they're looking to sort of do business with a yet undiscovered gem, they may well find it in the Wines Unearthed section. So that's got some really interesting prospects with it.
Okay, now that sounds good. How have you found the shift from XL back to Olympia? Because Olympia is a smaller venue than XL. Well, XL can be as big as you want, really, can't it?
Yeah.
But how have you found it? Because you haven't quite taken up all of Olympia space, but you've got a fair old whack of it.
That's right. I mean, XL is vast now. There are very few trade shows, I can't only think of one actually, that do fill the entire venue now. So it's very modular, and you can move walls around to suit the size of any event. And yes, our largest event, as I say, was 20,000, 2008. We filled up one half of one side, which was as big as it ever got. Moving back to Olympia, I think, has had some benefits in that the venue is perhaps...
more central?
It's certainly more central, but it's just more suitable. I think it's got an atmosphere, an ambiance, and a charm that just rather sort of works in the trade environment.
Yeah. XL can be a bit sterile.
It is. I mean, people, you know, let's not forget that this business is a very social one. And people do want to be able to nip out and take a client to a restaurant or you know, come and go a little bit more freely. XL, being stuck out in the Docklands, just didn't have that opportunity. You were trapped, which in some ways was great for us as organisers, but you were trapped in there for the duration of your stay. Being back here, you know, people are much more able, say you're a sommelier in the West End, to say, I'm going to do the afternoon at the wine show, jump in a cab, and you're here in 10 minutes. You just couldn't do that at XL. That said, XL has an airport, you know, half a mile away, and that's that was pretty good for us as well. I mean, like all venues, they all have their benefits and their drawbacks. The problem we face is, in London at least, these are the only two choices we've got, because there's nothing else big enough.
What about Earl's Court?
Being knocked down, old boy.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I didn't realise that. Well, they're building housing, I presume. Luxury flats.
Yeah, it'd be a combination of all that. But it's a great shame, because that was a beautiful venue.
Yeah.
And removing that as an option from organisers like me is, you know, that really narrows the opportunity.
O2 Arena, perhaps?
It's a great space, but I think it's just more suitable for a sort of sporting or concert venue than somewhere like this. You know, the natural light that you get in Olympia makes for such a great tasting environment.
Yeah.
It's really important. Since we were here back in, I guess it was like 2000, 2001, they've installed air cooling as well, which on a sunny day like today actually makes quite a useful difference.
Actually, I have been here when it didn't have air conditioning and it was unbearable. And I hadn't really noticed that it wasn't there, but I'm sitting in a woolen cardigan inside on a hot summer's day, or almost summer's day. So
we did get some incredibly warm shows, though. I think so, like 2000, it was 28 degrees outside, and under the glass roof of Olympia, probably chug another 5 degrees on top, and the champagne was exploding and the red wine was undrinkable. So it made for challenging conditions. In fact, and that was, again, one of the reasons that we decided to up sticks and give XL a go.
Now, tell me... last year, I saw a lot of beer here. There was a big area that was just doing a lot of craft beers, etc. Not so much this year. There is the odd beer producer, but it doesn't seem to have the presence it had last year. Is that a deliberate shift, or what was the reason behind that?
We wanted to grow the beer category, but I'm afraid it's a really boring reason why we can't. Trade shows have something called category protection. So... And it makes a lot of sense. If someone else, another organiser, decided to run a big wine fair a few weeks before us in the same venue, they wouldn't be allowed. because we have the category protection of wine in this venue. When we launched the beer bit, we thought, well, that's okay because it's a trade show and, you know, we can do that. And we thought beer, you know, complements obviously wine. Similar buyers have an interest in both. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Sadly, though, it wasn't in our original category to have the privilege to do that. So we got a slap on the wrist and can't do it again. But you never know. Things can change. And we're trying to work hard to make that happen. So what we did do, though, is launch a dedicated event, which will run for the first time in the end of October, called the Epicurean. And that'll bring together fine wine, fine food, fine spirits and the Truman Brewery. And it'll have a consumer element to it. And so we're kind of dipping our toes in the consumer event arena.
Because I think a London Wine Fair almost is a business, but it's not. It's part of the Brintex.
Yeah, Brintex has been going for, gosh, I think it's 52 years now. It's an independently owned exhibition company. Over my time, I've had the pleasure of, well, obviously working on the wine fair for 20 years. Other highlights, I did the National Lingerie and Swimwear Show.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, you can't come to that one, Chris.
Why not?
Well, you can, but you have to come to three of our tunnelling events first. So, you know, there's a hierarchy of waiting to get
in. I'll bring my own shovel.
Yeah, we do stuff in civil engineering, in traffic and transport, a world of stuff. But if I'm really honest, it's the wine fair that certainly for me personally ticks the boxes, and you know, love coming back.
Excellent. All right then, Will, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time, mate.
No worries, Chris. Thank you.